I'm going to call the meeting to order because we have a very full agenda, and also we're on cable TV live, so anyone who's not in their seat will be immediately called out. Including our staff. So all these well-behaved children in their chair, though, people should take note. This is a really good day for us to hear from all the groups. We all heard this morning, for those people that heard it, and I have not yet, but I heard from people who did, that the inauguration is full of hope and that everyone must do their part, and it will be hard. And so I think that that's what this meeting is all about today, that we're all in this together with the large deficit that we have. We're going to have several groups working on how can we do things differently, and that's part of what we'll talk about today. We have groups that have signed up to help us out with, and when we assign this, we still want to hear if there is funding to be increased, where would you most like to put it? And music to my ears will be the new Minnesota Miracle. Just a hint. And then, secondly, where would you most recommend cutting? And then thirdly, how would you recommend doing things differently? At the agenda that people got at the back of the room, if we keep on schedule, every group is getting 4 minutes, and I think that experienced people will know that that's all you'll get is 4 minutes, because we have Ted Coldry at the very end, and he said, what does this mean? It's nice to be the closer, but what if I don't get to speak at all because everyone took up the time? And I said, not to worry, you'll get your time because I run a tight ship, but also I want everyone in the room to know that Ted Coldry is not the closer. We have several of the large education groups that have worked together to come up with a list of mandate reduction, and that's one of our groups that's going to be working this year on mandate reduction. Everybody's looking to that as to be the savior. I don't think it will be the savior, but it will be a part of what we talk about. So if we stay on schedule, all the groups get 4 minutes, and that last group, we should still have 5 or 10 minutes to hear just a general overview of the fine work that they have done. So we'll start out with Representative Newton moving approval of the minutes for January 15th. Any discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails, and the minutes for January 15th are approved. The first group is Parents United. And you can see when you're the second group, if you could come down to the front row so we don't have to wait in between. Because when we said 4 minutes, we weren't counting waiting in between. So that means the chamber is next, et cetera. Welcome. Are you Craig Rowan?
I am.
If you could, when you come up, say your name for the tape and your title and the group that you're with, and then we will hear from you. So welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, thank you. I'd like to thank you for inviting us to testify today, and thank you to the entire committee. My name is Craig Rowan. I'm a parent of 2 children in public school in St. Paul. I'm also a board member of the Parents United for Public Schools, as well as I was privileged enough to participate in the PS Minnesota meetings over the last several years that eventually developed into what is now, as I understand it, H.R. 2. Parents United, first of all, would like to say that we are in support of H.R. 2. 40% of the state's budget is dedicated to public education, but funding policies sometimes are based upon untested initiatives, shall we say, or political compromises often disconnected from sound policy. H.R. 2 is a response to that. It's a rational funding formula based upon years and years of research, sound practices. It's not the product of partisan politics or unreflective ideologies. It is a fair allocation of funds based upon the premise of adequate and stable funding. We cannot continue to push ad hoc and inadequate funding solutions onto local taxing authorities, particularly at a time of great economic stress. We are pleased that the governor has signaled that he intends to if you will, hold harmless K-12 education during these trying economic times. But it's now critical that funding decisions are made in a smarter way and based upon sound educational policy. We believe that HR 2 is based upon sound educational policy. It's really a matter of accountability. And the other point that I'd like to make this afternoon does relate to accountability. We did some research, and we learned that the Minnesota Department of Education is charged with establishing statewide educational goals and the means of attaining those goals, and I'm referring to Minnesota Statute 127A.05, Subdivision 3. On its face, Madam Chair, it would appear to vest the Commissioner with the sole Commissioner of Education with the sole authority to form statewide policy and a plan to implement it. Of course, the legislature participates in the process of forming policy, and negotiation of policy is part of the political process. However, there are several problems that exist as a result of the current decision-making process as it is written in law. First of all, it lacks coherency from administration to administration. If we have a Minnesota Department of Education that is under the auspices of a governor, and we have governors that change over from time to time, policy changes, sometimes radically. It tends to produce policy that is a result of political compromise rather than sound and tested educational policy. Third, it is not subject to nonpartisan vetting process. And fourth, it creates a fundamental conflict of interest. The entity responsible for setting goals and policies, the Minnesota Department of Education, is the same entity measuring the effectiveness of those goals and policies. In 1997, the Office of Educational Administration, the OEA, was created pursuant to MnSTAT Section 120B.31 in an apparent effort to resolve this governance problem. In 2002, it was defunded. We believe that something of similar construct as the OEA should be either reinvigorated or created, and in fact that the authorizing statute be revised in two important ways. We would urge that this committee and that the legislature look closely at drafting and passing legislation that would do the following. That it would fund
a non- budget your time, you've got one more minute.
Thank you, and I'm almost through.
Okay.
It would fund directly a nonpartisan entity rather than have funding run through any particular office like the Minnesota Department of Education. And secondly, the statute should be broadened from its current form to assess the means of reaching graduation goals and also to vet the efficacy of proposed and in-place statewide educational policies and to conduct long-term assessments of those policies. Accountability is the goal. As well-intentioned as the executive and the legislative branches may be in formulating educational policy, the process is inherently partisan and tends to depart from best practices as a result. We propose that the state create a nonpartisan, highly professional entity that will inform the process and those charged with the responsibility of implement the best possible practices in the most cost-effective manner possible. Thank you.
Thank you very, very much, and you're definitely within your time limit, and thank you for your good ideas as well. Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, Stacia Smith, followed by Education Minnesota. Welcome, and you know the stating of your name part.
Yes, I do, Madam Chair and committee members. Thank you. My name is Stacia Smith, and I'm with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. It's good to see you all again. For those of you who haven't met yet, I look forward to meeting you. The Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, just as a slight introduction, is the largest business advocacy organization in the state. We represent over 2,700 businesses in Minnesota. 40% are in greater Minnesota, 60% are in the metro area, and about 80% are small businesses, which we define as fewer than 100 employees. And given the deficit, the Minnesota Chamber understands that all areas of the budget this year will be on the table. And we would like to work with the legislature to find a way to fix the budget deficit without increasing taxes. We recognize that this will be a challenge, but we are confident that the economy will turn around, and we want to discourage doing anything that may derail or delay that turnaround. In light of this, our initiatives this year will be limited to help reduce costs. And to reduce costs, one idea that we have heard that we would like to see happen is the concept of sharing services. And if we could require school districts to share the cost for ancillary services, such as transportation, food service, maintenance, in order to direct more dollars to education. I was also encouraged to note if we did have strategic investments to make where they would be, and if there were that opportunity to make any additional investments, we would encourage the legislature to invest in the Principals Academy to help train our school leaders. We would also like to see an incentive program to encourage the best teachers to teach in the schools with the greatest needs, so those with the largest achievement gap. And if that can't happen this year, we look forward to working on that in the out years too. And we have a number of policy initiatives which I'll reserve for the policy committee.
Thank you very, very much. Dan Altweger, Education Minnesota.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Dan Altweger, Education Minnesota. It's very nice to be back here, I think. We represent a lot of educators. You know who we are, the former Minnesota Education Association, the former Minnesota Federation of Teachers merged to join together to become Education Minnesota for those newer legislators. To start out with what we need to keep, I'm going to kind of shape it into what is working. And really what we need to keep is the quality education system that we have for our kids. We need to keep the excellent teachers that we have in our buildings and the excellent support staff. And so that, when you look at our graduation rate, our ACT scores, our math and science, that is what we need to keep, the quality education. So then you say, what do you need to work on? What do we need to work on? Well, it's all about funding, isn't it? And if you look at what's happening with the achievement gap, with ELL, if you have attended any of our legislative forums around the state, you have heard teachers not crying about salaries, even though that is a problem. They're crying about what's happening to the quality of the system for their kids, about the cuts that are happening. And so I think it's a problem that it goes beyond just the education committee. As you know, it goes into the other committees. What do we need to reform? I have a great bubble for loosening for you. Mm-hmm. We have a problem with schools not being able to fund the programs. They can't afford teachers. And then we're going through staff cuts. You could put in a statewide health insurance plan for school employees, and you could put in a pension system that allows them to leave at a age that is more comparable to a number of other professions, and I can get into that more later if you'd like, but not today. Mm-hmm. It would be a cost saving so that you can have the more expensive teachers leave because they can afford health insurance. And then I there's not much time, so I'm going to get to mandates because I know that that's an issue that's going to be brought up. Just be clear that the mandate document that you are going to receive is Education Minnesota has not been a part of. There, you will probably hear things like staff development and a number of other issues. I would just ask you to look through the when you see the mandate document, to look through it with the filter of the employee's eyes. Because when mandates are taken out for a repeal, you sometimes put that mandate on the workers who are serving the kids. They are still going to have to provide the services, or there will be expectations that are still out there. Even if that mandate isn't on the school district, it becomes a mandate on the employee. Just if we have, I have 30 seconds maybe left.
About that.
Okay, just an example. Staff development. That will be one of the hot issues that you will debate this year. But let me remind you of the law quickly. The law says that the school district has to set aside 2% for staff development revenue. But if a district is in statutory operating debt, they do not have to reserve any money at all for staff development. Then the law continues to state that if a district wants to spend less than 2%, the majority of the board and the majority of the teachers can reduce that dollar amount. And often that happens. And if teachers don't want to reduce the amount, actually what that means is that there's less money for salaries and things for bargaining. So it also tells you that they have a real need for staff development. Maybe it's a reading curriculum that's been implemented. Maybe it's a writing project across the district. Mm-hmm. So, Madam Chair, if you've been generous with your time, I'm not looking at the watch. I really appreciate it. and look forward to discussing all of these issues with you at any time throughout the legislature.
We're actually a bit ahead of schedule due to the Chamber not taking their full time. The Chamber gave their time to Education Minnesota. And by the way, Ms. Alsager, I think that mandate reduction list, I'm sure you'll be doing it anyway, but I'm sure we would all like to have your, you know, critique on it, which ones you would support. So welcome, Ms. Kelleher, and if you could state your name and give us your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. My name is Grace Kelleher, and I represent the Minnesota School Boards Association. We represent every school district in the state of Minnesota. I shared with you in a blue folder, it's a see-through blue folder, some information about our association. If you look into the dark blue folder, you'll find some information about the services we provide to school districts across the state, as well as staff and board members. And there might be some faces you've seen around the state in different educational settings as we go forward. But it's sort of a nice reference to understand the service that we provide school districts. Also in the package, you will find some pictures of some children on it, along with our legislative platform. And Madam Chairman, as you noticed, the first one, talking about investment in Minnesota future, is the new Minnesota Miracle Funding. That's a position my association took overwhelmingly in their delegate assembly in December.
Great.
Certainly reducing special education cross-subsidy amounts have been huge from our member districts. We've been hearing more of that than ever before. Allowing districts to start school when it's the best time for kids, and we really encourage you to think about the students. They are truly our first priority as we go forward, and as Ms. Alsager shared with you, we have some concerns about staff development. I would have you consider that there is a 50% that goes to the local school that they are able to determine. 25% is allowed for the board to determine, and 25% goes to innovative grants in the school district. So it doesn't tend to be a real cohesive system all the time, and really with some of our needs across the state, we might suggest that this might be the time to look at very focused needs in staff development dealing with the achievement gap. Legislation to allow flexibility. We'd like to expand options for electronically attending open meetings. We'd like to remove the commissioner approval for the four-day week option. And out-of-the-box type thinking, I know school districts are often considered sort of stodgy and regimented in our thinking. We've got some ideas for you to at least consider and ponder. We'd like categorical revenues to be used by school boards, that they all be merged in one categorical fund, and school districts be allowed the flexibility to spend that money among any of their categorical amounts. So it would be recreating this in a time of difficulty to really prioritize how we spend that money. We'd like to enact in law a state account in the surplus years. This isn't one of them, but a rainy day account for education so we don't weather the bumps that other places do. We would like school boards to opt out of state mandates by a two-thirds vote of the board. On a new initiative, we'd like you to consider moving the management of the school trust fund lands from the Department of Natural Resources to the Department of Education. To give you a feel of the DNR presently takes about $20 million out of the revenues from the school trust fund lands to manage that in that department. That's almost the exact match to the entire amount used in the Department of Education. And last but definitely not least, Madam Chairman, we've been very concerned about math and science in this state. And we really think we need to think outside of the box on that, especially in a year like this. We'd like to give all Minnesota schools access to classroom materials and seasoned teachers. And we have some specific ideas about creating a statewide lending library for lab materials in science and math. So districts aren't all purchasing that, but they have access to that. And a team of intensive specialists that could reach out to teachers and school districts that are having problems in certain areas, and you could send a specialist to deal with, sort of like an insurance specialist, that might help us reach out to kids in a different way. And we certainly think things from GPS units to graphing calculators are things that could be loaned out and thus saving school districts money in the long run. It's similar to a program already in place in Alabama. With Madam Chairman, I'll conclude my statements. I look forward to a good session, and I appreciate your dedication to Minnesota students.
Thank you very, very much. MASA, Charlie Kite, followed by the secondary school principal. Oh, good. Yeah. Welcome, and please state your name for the tape.
Good afternoon. I am Charlie Kite. I'm the executive director of the Minnesota Association of School Administrators. I don't know how many of you remember back to 1981-82. Some of you, in fact, few of the younger people in the room may have still been in high school then. It was the first year I was a school superintendent. And I have to tell you that after five, what turned out to be raucous but timid special sessions, we continue to see more and more school funding cut back. I can tell you that there was a point when I was sitting across the kitchen table from my spouse, who just got laid off from her job in the next school district. She was drawing cartoons about that other superintendent for her Education Association newsletter, and I was reading the school board manual on how to lay off my friends and neighbors. A lot of the school superintendents in the state are very nervous that they're going to be looking at that kind of a scenario again. I'm going to try to use my time to very quickly touch on three things: investment, reducing costs, and innovation and reform. Let me go quickly. Investment. Within the present rules that we operate our schools under, it will require 3.5% more money each year to continue operating the programs that we are now operating. That's within the box that has been built for us. We have three macro possibilities as we go forward. One is you find that money. Number two, we cut many, many, many staff and programs. And number three, the box becomes redefined. Every one of those has a cost. If you try to raise the money, you're going to have to raise taxes. If you say to the schools, sorry, there is no money, we'll make the cuts, and we'll see a significant increase of unemployment in our public sector. And if you redefine the box, you also are going to upset the equilibrium and have a lot of us probably at each other's throats as you look at those significant changes. So those are the macro possibilities we see in front of us. We would prefer the first one. We may not get it. I'd like to move to reduction in cost, and I'd say very quickly about mandates. Every mandate that we have governing our public schools right now was created either because there was a need or there was an interest group behind it. Rolling them back will not be easy. When you look at them one at a time, each one doesn't look that oppressive. I will tell you, though, when you see the list a little bit later on, some of you maybe have just seen it recently, when you take it in total, it is smothering the school districts to the point where it's very difficult to operate. We're asking you to look significantly at rolling some of those back. I'm going to shift now to innovation and reform. First of all, I'll just make this comment. Innovation is the new catchword. People are running around using it thinking it's some kind of a cure-all. I can tell you that there is no innovation that I can think of, major innovation in education, that is going to deliver you dollars saved on day one. It takes time. Now, there is opportunity here in this kind of a time to make some changes, but don't do it. I don't think you can do it from the standpoint that you're going to somehow save a lot of money. Our advice is try to open the routes to innovation rather than try to dictate them from the top down. There's a lot of discussion going on in districts right now about redelivering the way they do education, administrative units, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You want to encourage that, not stifle it. There are three, I'll just mention four reform ideas. The first one is, let's get on with figuring out how to do early education, be that kindergarten and early childhood. Let's get that job done. Let's come away from 2 years, look back to 2 years from now and say, not much else happened good, but we actually made a step forward there. That's the most important step. Secondly, if you help to open the avenue, I think you're going to see more reorganization of districts and schools within districts. We should be looking at ways that we can share staff more broadly. That would be public institutions with public institutions and public institutions with private partners. And finally, we should look at ways to, I made up this word, unsilo licensure. We license people at the county level, we license them at the school district level, we license them at the college level. There seems to be some opportunity to say, a license in an area person relatively well prepared could work across those institutions, and that would save us a little bit of money. So I'll close by just saying this. You've got a big challenge ahead of you. We understand how big that challenge is, but we would recommend to you to be bold and take some significant steps. We don't want to be here, neither do you, all summer long with timid special sessions. Let's get this job done. Thank you very much for giving us some time.
Thank you very much. Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, ma'am. I just wanted to point out that in 1981 I was in elementary school, not high school.
Some people. Welcome, Mr. Arnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Roger Arnson. I represent the Secondary Principals Association. I also represent the Elementary Principals Association and the High School League. They might not be on your list there, but in talking with Madam Chair and staff, I'm going to give you a couple ideas and things we want to talk about. Nice to see you recovered, Representative Slocum. A couple things, members, and you're going to hear all of the financial pieces from everybody. A couple things from the school principal's view. First of all, one of the things we'd like you to take a look at if you have the interest in it is several of our principals in our districts receive Q-Comp. And we think Q-Comp and rewarding teachers for delivering significant results in the classroom are good things. We're concerned, however, and several of our principals are concerned about teachers being out of the classroom and the negative impact that teachers being out of the classroom has and the cost of having them out of the classroom. And to the extent that you can look at restructuring Q-Comp to provide those teachers who are providing or achieving positive results or improved results in their classroom with some rewards, we think that's good. But we think we need to limit or that we could redistribute some of this money in such a fashion for those that are out of the classroom that's a bad thing and just something for you to consider. Second, on the list of activities, let me say with the High School League, we've had some significant discussions about reducing the number of contests that we have as a cost-saving measure. And when you discuss this, one of the things that you may want to consider, however, is that we have a significant inequity for those rural districts whose students have to travel very far for their extracurricular activities. If you're in, and not to pick on the urban core, but my daughter played basketball in Minneapolis. when she was a senior, they went on one long trip. It was to North Branch. The students that are in your districts out there go on these types of trips all of the time, and the districts have to pay the transportation costs for that. Extracurriculars are an important part of the secondary experience for students, and if we could somehow add some transportation monies into or directed towards that, we think that that could help that we don't discontinue as many of those activities as we're going to have to as we run into the budget cuts. I'm sure a lot of you saw the articles in the paper over the weekend and the significant budget cuts that are coming on extracurriculars. Those fall unduly harshly on districts where the transportation costs are quite a bit higher. One of the other things on the looking at things closely and making some tough decisions, I know that our secondary principals would have you say look closely at PSEO, set some standards about achievement issues. PSEO has largely evolved into a financial aid program and where a lot of students and parents access dollars and credits, you know, that are paid for out of our K-12 system. And that's a very popular thing, and obviously that's not going to change. But there should be some criteria. If we're going to run this as a scholarship program, there should be some criteria that are imposed to say maybe then if we have limited funds, the kids have to meet some standards before they're going to access those reduced or free credits at the secondary level. And again, this is a very popular program and very favored legislatively, and so it wouldn't be something that we'd want to change, but we want you to look at that closely and say, let's apply some real strict standards then as to who's going to access the extra dollars that are you know going to be available there. In terms of things that on the reform piece, we would have to say on our elementary side, we think there's no better reform than you look at putting monies into early childhood and all day K, and that the results that come out of these, you know, just reforms that are sitting on the shelf waiting to happen, and that what we get back from the dollars that we spend in that area are just so positive that we really want you to look at that if you can. Madam Chair, we appreciate the time, and we'll be here all year. Anything that you need, let us know.
Thank you very much. Coalition for Children with Disabilities, Kim King. Oops, I skipped someone. Sorry. But we'll take you next as long as you're here. But then let me go back after you, and we'll get to MASBO. I apologize for that.
Yeah, can I
keep people on their toes here, right?
Right.
Welcome, and if you could restate your name for the tape.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Kim Tang. I'm with the Coalition for Children with Disabilities. The Coalition has a particular emphasis on special education for children with disabilities in the state of Minnesota. And we represent 8 statewide organizations composed of PACER Center, the Autism Society of Minnesota, United Cerebral Palsy Minnesota, Epilepsy Foundation of Minnesota, the Minnesota Disability Law Center, the Brain Injury Association of Minnesota, the International Dyslexia Association, and the Minnesota School Psychologists Association. And I basically have just 2 points to make today around special education. Number one, we need adequate and consistent funding for special education. Unfortunately, as you all know, special education is a federal mandate. So it's not like schools can really opt out in providing the services or having the funds to do that. We currently have about 123,000 students in the state of Minnesota receiving special education services. The Minnesota Department of Education has informed us that children with autism is increasing in the state. We may be identifying them earlier, but those kids are out there and they need those services. So we need to, I think, look at that, and clearly the federal funding has not been there. I think that's complicated things. You know, we should have been receiving 40%. We're only receiving around 17% now. Unfortunately, the state has not, ponied up to its funding obligations either, because, we are obligated to pay 68%, or we've promised 68% of salaries to schools, and I think we're currently at around 61%. So I would appeal to this committee to seriously consider adequate and consistent funding of special ed. We have been up and down since 2003, very much like the rest of education. And I think it's going to be important, because we want to be sure special education is funded sufficiently so we don't continue to have to pull this cross subsidy away from other, from the other classroom expenses. So, and at this point, we are starting to build that cross subsidy back up to a little over $600 million. So I think it's very important that we continue to look at special education funding as a priority, try to get that federal money, because we do have some money in the Congressional Economic Stimulus Bill right now. So I would encourage everybody on this committee to get in contact with our federal legislators to let them know we need that money, and then also look at something at the state level. And secondly, very quickly, I just want to talk a little bit about students with disabilities in the future workforce. The statistics I've looked at on a national level, only around 35% of adults with disabilities are employed in this country. As compared to adults who don't have disabilities, they have a rate more like 80% or higher. I think we have an opportunity, given, future labor shortfall, to actually really tap into our youth. And I think looking at the transition services that we provide, I know we have them in place, but I know in some places implementing them has been sketchy at best. So I would really like to encourage the committee to think about children or youth in transition as they go into vocational rehab. Some of them, many of them, will go on to college, trying to smooth out some of the issues around transition, because we have a workforce opportunity there that I think we should tap into. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. And now we'll go to MASBO. Mr. Ottman, if you could state your name and welcome, and sorry I skipped over you for a minute.
Well, all right. Madam Chair, I'm Earl Ottman, Business Manager for the Peer School District, and I'm representing MASBO, Minnesota Association of School Business Officials. Thank you for the opportunity to come before you today. I want to first of all speak on the shared services bill that's been out there. The reality is that districts are already doing a great deal in the area of cooperating. My district alone, we do bulk purchasing of paper, custodial supplies, food service supplies and materials, audiovisual, office supplies and equipment. I can go on and on. We also do shared services financial, copiers, snow removal. We do cooperating with teaching with our local special ed district. We do that as well. We believe that there are pros and cons to the shared services and buying in bulk. These products, if you want to buy in bulk, these products can sit on the shelf all year long. They can wear, they can lose their value, such as in pens. They can dry out, etc. I mean, we're talking about petty items here that, if you look at it, districts are doing quite a bit of bulk purchasing. We don't need another mandate that will inhibit us in finding the best bang for the buck. I hope I've made my point on that. There's other issues in that bill, that, such as there's no emergency provisions in that bill. I hate to have to close a school district down or a building down because I can't go across the street, buy a bolt to fix a piece of equipment that is necessary in keeping that building open. Okay? We also, NASBO has also developed a position paper that I've provided to you, Madam Chair. And these are some of the things that we're talking about. We'd like to see some financial incentives to school districts to combine. This was done in the past. We think it was successful then, but it takes some money to do this. We also, in areas of shared services, if you want to help us, if we could get some negotiations going across cities, counties, school districts in the state, in the purchasing of utilities, even if it's fuel oil or natural gas, that could help us all across the board. I don't know if it's power, but we all use those items, and those things would help us. Yes, we're even recommending some mandated set-asides, such as the 2% staff development, or the elimination of unnecessary reserves, such as those for the alternative learning centers. The other areas is if we could transfer debt service excess to the general fund, we could use some of those dollars. These are trying times, and we need to think out of the box and use those dollars that we have available. We're recommending that we freeze salaries across the board for the 2009-10 school year. We also recommend the freezing of district insurance contributions. We do, however...
You've got about one more minute.
Okay. We would have incremental steps in our removal still allowed. We also recommend that we remove the right to strike for all public employees and allow binding arbitration. We recommend the elimination and reduction of the state support to non-public schools for textbooks, nurses, counselors. The constitutional mandate of a free and uniform system of schools does not require support of a non-public system. And lastly, since districts are restricted by law and contracts as to when layoffs may occur, we ask you to act quickly in these areas so that we can act accordingly to save all the necessary dollars. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. Elaine B., Minnesota School Nutrition Association. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I'm Elaine Keith. I'm here representing the Minnesota School Nutrition Association. Our association is made up of school nutrition directors, cooks, cafeteria servers, and dietitians. Our top priority this year is ensuring adequate funding for school lunch. And we know there's a deficit, but we feel that we would be doing our job if we didn't talk to you about our need. Anyone who goes to the grocery store knows that the price of food has risen sharply, and that has affected school nutrition programs. The vast majority of our programs can't cover the cost of a school lunch through the traditional combination of federal funding, state funding, and student payments. Schools in Minnesota lose an average of 43 cents for every lunch that they serve. And actually, I'm expecting that number to go up when we get the new figures from the Department of Education next month. School boards expect their nutrition programs, though, to be self-supporting. They don't want to take money out of the general fund in order to cover a deficit in the food service fund. because that takes money out of the classroom. And so most districts make up that 43 cent per meal gap by selling a la carte items, individual food items like bags of chips and so forth. And many of those, unfortunately, have little nutritional value, but they tend to be the top sellers. Additional state funding for school lunch can help us by reducing our dependence on a la carte sales and also enable us to purchase more nutritious foods like fresh fruits and vegetables and whole grains. A host of research studies establish the importance of nutrition in improving student achievement. Simply put, hungry children can't learn. And in this economic downturn, we've got an increasing number of children who are depending on school meals really to fulfill their basic nutritional needs. And so we ask you to do what you can for us, and we look forward to working with you this session. Thank you.
Thank you very much. MREA, Sam Walseth. Welcome.
Thank you. Madam Chair, members, my name is Sam Walseth. I'm the Legislative Director for the Minnesota Rural Education Association. MREA is a consortium of about 150 school districts in Greater Minnesota. And it's an organization that focuses on the learner and learner opportunities, equitable learner opportunities for kids across Greater Minnesota. To that end, MREA analyzes legislation that is proposed through the lens of how it's going to impact opportunities for kids. Madam Chair, members, I'm not unaware of the economic crisis that's going on, but as Ms. Keith just said, we wouldn't be doing our job if we didn't state the needs out there. And quite simply put, Madam Chair, members, we need a new miracle for education funding here in the state. We need financial stability for our school districts and educational opportunities, and if that takes a tax increase, that's what it takes. I know that isn't exactly popular, but continuing to see school budgets get cut year in and year out, staff laid off, educational opportunities shrink, is not a positive step for our state and our state's economy overall. Madam Chair, members, we would like to see the state implement a fair and adequate basic education formula that meets the inflationary pressures on school district budgets. We'd like to see the state pay for the costs associated with special education mandates. And we'd also like to see the state fund an expansion of early childhood and all-day kindergarten opportunities across Minnesota, especially for at-risk children. We'd also like to see the state pay for the ongoing costs associated with telecommunications equity access aid. And last but certainly not least, we'd like to see the state maintain its commitment to equalization when property taxes are used to fund educational programs. I think debt service equalization is a prime example of a program that's supposed to support an educational opportunity, school district buildings, that when left neglected over time, it completely erodes to the point where there really is, it's almost unfair to even say we have debt service equalization in the state of Minnesota. Members, ideas for cuts. School districts have made a lot of cuts. Surprise, surprise, our organization doesn't actually have a recommendation for where you could cut the K-12 budget. We have been debating the idea of the mandates and flexibility that you're going to have spend a lot of time discussing. And our organization thinks that in times of the economic crisis, you need to give management more flexibility to deal with the economic downturn, and that might mean some hard decisions when it comes to certain mandates that exist. And ideas for reform, Madam Chair, members, we think that incentives for financial incentives, the CARET approach to cooperative and grievance and consolidation is the way to go. In the past, when consolidations or more cooperations have taken place through the 70s and 80s, I too was an elementary school representative in Garofalo at that time, but I'm told that financial incentives were the way to get those done. And frankly, it's about severance. It's about the cost of the system and helping systems get over those costs to get the long-term savings. We think a financial incentive approach towards sharing and cooperation is the way to go. So, Madam Chair, members, we look forward to, it's going to be a difficult session. My 98-year-old grandfather lived through the Great Depression. We're going to get through this one, too. We'll all be fine. But we look forward to working with you throughout this legislative session. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And it's good that you have your 98-year-old grandfather to tell you what happened before you were born, and because people like Rip and Grapplo has to take advice also from Scott Brunquist, AMSB. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. My name is Scott Kronquist with the Association of Metropolitan School Districts, and there are a couple handouts coming around, and I'm going to try to move through them very quickly. The blue handout is our legislative platform that was developed by our Board of Directors over the summer and fall, and we really focus in on on four main issues. Number one, and far and away top priority, is support of the New Minnesota Miracle proposal. And we recognize that given the state of the economy and the budget situation, that will need to be phased in over a period of time. But nonetheless, that's exactly what we need to do, is work towards phasing it in. Number two is enhancing teacher quality. Given the rapid growth in our diverse population, the new requirements for our teachers, things like the growth model, we really need to make sure that our teachers are prepared to teach in today's classroom environment. Number three, intensifying efforts to help all students succeed. We really need to focus in on those students that are struggling to meet state standards. A couple of the ideas that our board came up with was having mandatory summer school for students that are not on track to meet state proficiency requirements. Number four is creating the State Center for Educational Leadership and Research. And you heard Parents United talk about that earlier, and we have had a similar goal to what they outlined. We think that you as policymakers have a need for better information that's data-driven, evidence-based, that will allow you to make solid decisions when important issues come forward. In the area of reform, actually we think a number of the areas on our platform are reform-minded, and we think the New Minnesota Miracle Bill is tremendous reform in the area of education finance. But you're going to hear more about mandate reduction. We think that's an area that we need to work on. We've told the authors of the shared services bill we're more than happy to work with them on that initiative. We do think there probably needs to be some changes to the bill as it was originally introduced, but we're happy to do that. Finally, Madam Chair, there's another handout in your packet, and it's just a series of PowerPoint slides. And the reason this is included is because we're asked to talk about possible reductions in the area of education, and as the previous testifier, Mr. Walter, pointed out, we really can't in good conscience come to you and tell you that we think that you can make reductions in education and that it won't be impact student achievement. Just quickly moving through the PowerPoint slides. Number one, it shows that the demographic changes, and it's not a surprise that we are rapidly changing in Minnesota in terms of the diversity of our student population. If you flip forward, students also bring greater challenges. Special education population up 16%, English language learners up 237%. This is all within the last 10 years. Students qualifying for free and reduced up 21%. We're looking at over $500 million special ed cost subsidy in Minnesota for our school districts. We are not funding just even the state special education formula, even though there was a strong effort to do that back in the 2007 session. As you can see, we're already sliding down in terms of the percentage of the state special ed formula that's being funded. The basic formula has not kept pace with inflation. Overall education funding, we have not kept pace with inflation. The last couple pages in that handout relate to a budget survey that we conducted of our member districts. We asked them just to assume that the state freezes education funding for the next 2 years and that you want to operate the same program. And as you can see, the districts in the metro area would be looking at $150 million in budget shortfalls. And that's just under a frozen funding scenario, which is why we cannot come to you today and tell you that you can cut education funding and everything will be okay. So thank you, Madam Chair and members. We look forward to working with you.
Thank you very much. School for Equity and Education, Brad Lundell and Gordon Thomas. Welcome.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Brad Lundell from School for Equity and Education. Glad to be here and back in front of you again this year. I'm sorry it's going to sound like an echo in here because most of what we're talking about in school structure and education has already been mentioned by other testifiers. We, of course, are very much in support of House File 2. We really commend the chair for coming forward with that early in the session. We certainly hope that that will gain traction as we move through this legislative session. As others have said, we're talking about an investment here in a world that it's far, far less dependent on physical capital for people making a living. We have to invest in our human capital, and I think education, strong education for all is very, very important. I surveyed members of the 60 members of Schools for Equity and Education. About 40 of them responded, and we've got a wide range of people making cuts, all the way from some districts that are able to see through this next couple of years, probably without cuts, very, very rare, and one of those districts is teetering on statutory operating debt but feels that it can't make any cuts. Other districts, like in Okehannafin, Rosemont, Apple Valley, Southwest, and County, will be making cuts of proposed cuts of over $10 million. So that is something that is certainly going to put a crimp into those districts. We've been working with an organization, a group of organizations, consortium, talking about mandate reform. I also do some legislative work for the Minnesota Administrators of Special Education, and we certainly think that the rules, discussion of rules there, what comes out of the task force or what may not come out of the task force that come forward really needs to be looked at, but also to look at future rulemaking authority and how that works through the Department of Education and create a stronger relationship between the legislature and the department. Well, I wouldn't say, we're Schools for Equity, and we've worked a lot on equalization over the years. I'm going to be talking to a district that's going to be featured this year in regards to that issue is Rockford. And joining me today is Gordon Thomas. Gordon Thomas is a school board member in Rockford, and to talk about the equalization and how that affects Rockford, I'll turn it over to him. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, welcome, Mr. Thomas. And if you could restate your name and title for the tape.
Yeah, my name is Gordon Thomas, and I'm school board chair of the Rockford Area Schools. Just to give you a brief background, I've been on the school board since 1998, so many of the funding changes that have gone ahead of us, I've experienced. You folks are faced with a difficult challenge this year. Okay, I'll put it in perspective of Rockford. Many, by the way, many of the people that were up here before Brad and I couldn't concur with more. We do need House Falto. We also do consortium purchasing with a number of districts and a number of other organizations. So that's not, as far as Rockford is concerned, a major thing. Let me just put this in perspective. In 1998, we passed an operating levy of $432. As you're well aware, in 2002, $415 of that was taken back by the state. So we're left with $12.65. In 2003, we went for an operating levy. It failed. It failed in 2004, 2005. It failed in 2008. Okay. To give you a perspective of where we're located in western Hennepin County and Wright County. We're sandwiched between Orono on our south, Delano on our southwest, Buffalo on our north, Osceola on our northwest, Wayzata on our east. Okay, so we're surrounded by a lot of very, very good districts. In the past 3 years, we've cut over $1 million from our operating funds. As far as ranking with regard to state revenue, we rank, according to the number Brad gave me on his website, 322, Osceola ranks 35. Wayzata ranks 78 from the top to the bottom. We're projecting at Rockford will probably be an SOD in 2000 by 2010. This year, as far as challenges we have, we have negotiations with teachers, service employees. We have to reduce our expenditures at least by 10% to have a balanced budget. And we have to accommodate all this with potential changes coming from the state legislature when you folks end your session. You don't have an easy task. Plus, we have a community that's involved in continuous improvement planning with our district. We've been doing that for at least 4 years, and it's been very successful. We have to do all this and keep kids first. As far as I'm going to skip a lot of this stuff and just talk about equalization.
That's good because you're about out of time.
Yep. We would support any increase in equalization aid. It's non-existent for us. We'd support it in the area of operating, debt service levy, as well as operating capital, alternative compensation, deferred maintenance, health and safety programs. These are big things. And I know it's going to be a tough year negotiating. A statewide freeze would help those school boards that don't have money in the first place, okay? And it would keep teachers employed or service personnel. I know I speak a little bit of heresy. I've never thought that that was a good idea, but it may work this time. Additionally, on location equity index, I think I've sent you some information on a spreadsheet regarding the number of districts that cover multiple counties. And in location equity index, only 51 districts reside within one county within the state. And there are three districts that cover six counties in the state. So location equity index, to me, should be a blended formula that would fund districts as a percentage of the counties they operate in. And I think that would be helpful. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That LEI is always a work in progress, so we appreciate all the help we can get. while being committed to the idea. St. Paul Public Schools and Minneapolis Public Schools, are you together or just they just isn't a space on the agenda between them? Are they presenting separately? Together. Okay. But we'll give you, you know, you can have up to 8 minutes as long as there's two school districts. But since you're, if you're similar and coordinated, we'll like it even better. So welcome, and please state your names for the tape.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, I'm Mary Gilbert from the St. Paul Public Schools, and the page is passing around some information, and I just want to point out what's in the packet, which you could use later if you have trouble falling asleep, that it includes our strategic plan, our shared accountability framework, our program catalog that we offer in St. Paul, and it also has our annual report. The reason I included this information in your packet is just to demonstrate to the committee that we are very, very strategic about the way we invest our money in St. Paul. We get stakeholder input on a community-wide basis, and we report our findings back to the public on an annual basis. And so I just urge you to take a look, if you want to look at one document, to look at the annual report, because it does measure how we're doing on a yearly basis related to our strategic plan. This has really been kind of a tough presentation to prepare for. The district, you might have read in the newspaper, is currently looking at trying to do a budget where we cut $25 million, or 5% of our total budget, in St. Paul. And we've been cutting in the millions of dollars every year for the last 5 years. So in regards to mandates, unfortunately, most of the mandates that are costing us the most money that are unfunded are those that are given to us by the federal government. For example, our highly mobile and homeless mandate, we transport every day 45 to 50 kids from outer ring suburbs. We have to arrange we provide special transportation like cabs or vans or whatever for 750 students a year. We put another several hundred kids on our traditional school buses or our MTC under this program. That was a new federal mandate that we've had in the last couple of years. We currently have two schools in corrective action and two in pre-restructuring. When NCLB was first initiated, there actually was some money that would come along with the sanctions that NCLB have, and there is no longer. Last year, all the restructuring that we did at the district for the schools that were in corrective action cost the district an additional $1.5 million that we had to take from other services to cover the obligation that we had under NCLB. When we had the budget crisis in 2003, in our attempt to try and keep the cuts away from the classroom, we ended up really paring down categorical revenues. So ELL services were cut limited to 5 years, special ed was cut, integration aid was cut, extended day was cut, compensatory revenue was cut, and so a district like ours that serves a high proportion of at-risk and ELL students and poor children ended up having a much deeper cut to our budgets compared to the state average. As my predecessor, so I'm hoping as we consider this difficult budget situation that we don't pit students and districts against each other, as it was so aptly done today at the inaugural, where we are all in this together, and that our economy and future of Minnesota depends on us having as many high school graduates as possible. And so as we take a look at that, we hope that you would continue to invest and not tear those down again, the extended day programs and some of the services that we have in place to try and increase the graduation rate. As far as mandate reduction, just reducing the sheer number of reports that we do. What comes up repeatedly from our curriculum people is that Minnesota, while we have high standards, we have way too many standards. I think if you take a look at the number of standards that we have in place, I think it's like 22 pages of middle school math standards, for example, done in pretty small print. It would be much easier for us to prepare the curriculum, do the staff training, and actually do the student implementation if we had fewer standards to consider reducing the number of tests that we do. If you take a look at the testing calendar, especially if you're colorblind, you'd have a hard time trying to sort it out. We do a number of tests, and we should consider exactly which ones we need and which are directly related to student achievement. We need to take a look at the flexibility around special ed, but especially the new birth to three mandates. That, again, was another big increase and new mandate that we have related to the kids under 0 to 3, and then how we deal with the transition when, you know, we might identify a kid when they're 2, and then a whole new set of standards and requirements goes into effect when a student turns 3, and we are having conversations with the department about that. Right now, a district can't extend their day to a school without offering it to all the charter schools, all the other public schools, and all the private schools in their district. That's the equal treatment law. We would also like districts, as I spoke to you before, under the NCLB mandate, the districts should be able to access this QCOMP money for the cost that the districts incur for corrective action or pre-restructuring, because a lot of that involves the teacher development, teacher curriculum, and teacher training. Another would be the districts do an incredible amount of healthcare services at the district. An incredible amount. Kids actually can't attend school, for example, if they don't get their immunizations. Well, tracking down kids, getting their immunizations, which we actually provide at the student center, notifying them by certified letter that they'll have to be kicked out of school if they don't do their immunizations is incredibly staff heavy. We also do diabetic care. It's not uncommon for us to do nebulizers.
You're now into Mr. Grapple's time. Right. That's okay with him. It's okay with us. But well, the two of you will be done in 8 minutes, regardless.
I'm going to just say that we do have some good relationships with the HMOs in covering these health-related services. Mm-hmm. However, some are better than others. And so we would encourage you to provide incentives or even require the HMOs to actually pay for the health-related services that we provide.
Madam Chair and members, my name is Jim Grasswell. I represent the Minneapolis Public Schools. Stay here. And I may have an opportunity to cede any remaining time to my colleague from St. Paul. In terms of investment, you know, I'll go with the research that your best dollar is spent early. But I'd want to, you know, and so that's early childhood. We have our four-year-old kindergarten program, all-day K, early childhood family education. We have families that we serve that need resources before they need education resources before they arrive at our programs, even if that is a four-year-old program. But in any investment, and I'm not, it's an exuberant day. I'm not irrationally exuberant about the possibility of investment in this session, but for us, with a special ed cost subsidy of $44 million in 2007, if you don't solve and address the special ed problem, dollars you place elsewhere on the formula or even in categorical, because we're spending our compensatory revenue to backfill a special ed cost subsidy. So that's a critical investment. In terms of reducing costs, many good things have been mentioned, and what I would add is we could look at aligning service responsibility and finance on provision of special ed services. I think we have an opportunity, at least in Minneapolis, when we had tuition billing taken over by the Department of Education, we saw our tuition billing costs go down. I think people behave differently when they're monitored. And I think now I am basically under the new, under the next set of budget cuts at the department, I wonder whether or not they're going to be able to manage that. And so having, if you open enroll to a district or a charter, I think you may want to look at having whoever is providing service responsible for paying for the cost of that service. I think that would actually provide you savings on day one. I don't have a spreadsheet on that. So in terms of innovation and reform, Madam Chair, I support the Minnesota Miracle Bill that you've worked so hard on and others and many in the education community. In addition, the shared services, again, you've heard testimony that we're actually doing a lot of that on the purchasing and leveraging volume and different purchasing pools. And I think there's room to work with that on the personnel side, the service delivery side. But I don't think the bill, as we've seen it introduced, is in the proper shape, and I'm happy to work with the authors on that. You know, and the next thing, it's already been mentioned, cooperation and consolidation. You may want to look at how many school districts you need to deliver services. So those are boundary issues. And if I, Madam Chair, if I have any remaining time, I would cede it to my good friend and colleague, Mary Gilbert.
She can have 1 minute if she wants it. No, she doesn't.
Sure. Okay, thank you both
very much.
Is there anyone here for the intermediate school district? They were on the list, but it's unclear if they're here. Okay. Minnesota Business Partnership, Jim Bartholomew. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members.
Appreciate the opportunity to meet with you this afternoon. My name is Jim Bartholomew with the Minnesota Business Partnership. And just briefly as introduction, our members are the CEOs of the larger companies in the state, employing a little over 2 million people worldwide and 400,000 in Minnesota. And since our inception, education has been one of our top priorities. I'd like to frame some of our recommendations within some suggested policy guidelines that roughly fall into three categories: students, school staff, and measuring results. For students, we should support and expand diverse learning opportunities. Minnesota has done a good job of providing students with different opportunities to meet their academic needs, and these opportunities have been critical for student success. Examples of these options include charter schools, open enrollment, post-secondary enrollment options, alternative learning centers, and online learning. We'd encourage you to look for ways to expand on these options. For school staff, continue to invest in their development and in alternative compensation strategies. Again, the legislature has supported a number of professional development opportunities, ranging from best practice networks, the Principals Leadership Academy, the Math and Science Teachers Academy, and QCOMP, which also represents an important effort to work with schools and teachers to create alternative compensation strategies. Supporting the development of teachers and principals is essential to improve student achievement. And third, because we measure student performance, we're able to follow student achievement relative to the state's expectations or standards. And while statewide testing is occasionally controversial, it has created a tremendous source of comparable information about student performance. And because of this, schools, districts, and state policymakers are able to be much more strategic in analyzing performance trends and identifying effective best practices, which directly benefits students. And at less than one-half of 1% of the overall K-12 budget, our statewide assessments provide essential information. That was the fun part, where we should support funding. In regard to areas that might be reduced, anything that doesn't directly support students, school staff, or the ability to measure student progress should be considered. What's an example of that? So I mention this not because its goal isn't critical. In fact, we should be doing this as a regular part of our core mission. But the state spends more than $60 million a year to provide integration aid. In addition, districts are required to submit plans to the state for approval. This is not only a significant budget item, but it also requires a fair amount of preparatory work at the district and state level. We just ask, are we meeting the goals of this program as best we can? If there are other similar state-mandated reports and activities, and it's wonderful to see the blue sheet that lists many of them, that can be repealed, they should be considered as well. And a third suggestion, we'd encourage you to adopt some version of the shared practices proposal. The shared practice proposal may not be the perfect answer as it is, but it can and should lead to permanent changes that make the delivery of non-instructional services more cost-efficient. Finally, in regard to an area for reform, Minnesota has been truly fortunate to have so many dedicated teachers. Unfortunately, for us, nearly half of our current teaching force is expected to retire over the next several years. As a result, we must ensure that our schools can select among top quality candidates for the next generation of teachers. In putting your bill together, please ask if there are additional strategies that we can use to attract high caliber professionals into teaching. Are our new teachers adequately prepared? And are we creating broader professional opportunities for teachers? Thank you very much for your time, and we very much look forward to working with you this session.
Thank you very much. Remember, 2 years ago you were first on the list, and now you're towards the end, and both times you got your equal share. So that is a lesson for Mr. Coldry, who now comes up. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is to go down in history. I appreciate the chance to be here. I'm Ted Boldery. I'm a senior associate with Education Evolving, which is a nonpartisan, non-commercial, non-academic, and non-governmental policy group that works both here in Minnesota and around the country. We make you essentially one suggestion. Push hard to change school, the form of school, and the approach to learning. Minnesota's current strategy, like the country's, is to hold tight to conventional school and to require students and teachers to do better with that model. This produces small effects. As revenues fail to keep pace, the traditional model deteriorates. You want big effects. And big effects are going to come only from changing school. We can get a lot more from our teachers and our students than we are, but not with the old and obsolete model of high school especially. So, first, push to open ways for students to accelerate their learning. New schools that individualize learning can change the pace at which students move. John Goodlad in 1984, in The Place Called School, proposed ending high school at age 16. If we could collapse high school and college into 6 years, we would save a great deal of money for other uses, including early childhood, and would increase students' lifetime earnings. Universities are moving courses online. High schools could increasingly as well. Schools using RTI could cut special ed costs. With H3 grade 3 schools, children could read better sooner at no increase in expenditure. Peer teaching, as Hank Levin told the Growth and Justice meeting a year or so ago, can be an effective and cost-effective approach to learning. Second, give small districts a better way to reorganize and share both learning and administrative support. Look at Minnesota's joint powers legislation, 471.59, especially subdivision 10, which is on your screen and in your packet. This lets any governmental unit defer any function to any other governmental unit. Schools to counties and cities and counties back to school districts. With the existing model of high school, there are no good options for the small high school in the rural part of Minnesota. But we know there are different models now operating here, innovations within your chartered sector, that do make it possible to have economically and educationally viable high schools at the scale as low as 120 students in sixth grade. Third, push for new schools that make teaching a really good job and a really good career, where teacher roles are larger, teachers are more motivated, and schools work better. It's fine to push for higher qualifications, better recruiting, better training. But that agenda might not succeed unless teaching becomes a better job and a better career. Just a word about the how of change. Use dynamics, not mandates. Let people try things. Don't try to do innovation. Do what causes innovation. You'll be amazed, I think, what school teachers and students will come up with. The whole area of information technology has huge, huge potential, still largely untapped. Some of the innovations will cause some people to gasp, this is not real school. And clearly, it won't be. It won't be delivering education the old way. Innovation is about being different, however. So you'll want to keep traditional school. Just don't let the traditional suppress the innovative. With that kind of a split-screen strategy, K-12 will then change gradually, people moving from one to the other in their own time as they make their own decisions, the way most all our systems change. Innovation and choice create competition, and competition is resisted, and some organizations will appeal for protection. But we're optimistic. Our conversations with district people suggest they understand how serious the state of the problem is. They know that cutting offers no solution. Privately, they fear the existing system is unsustainable. Not all are ready to move to redesign schools, but many are. You need and you can get big effects, both on learning and on the economics of K-12. I'd agree with Charlie Kite. There is nothing in the reform that's going to help greatly with the short-term budget problem. But since 1825, I read the other day, fiscal crises like the present one have taken 7 years to work out. So you need to start. They will not pay up. You need to begin moving into the southeast corner, the lower right-hand corner of this graph, in every way you can. There really is no alternative to a strategy that innovates radically with forms of school and approaches to learning. We appreciate the chance to be here today. We'd be pleased to talk with you further at any time and look forward to working with you on implementing legislation. Thank you, Madam.
Thank you very much, Mr. Coltrane. We can't see that. I at least can't see that. Is it say tax cuts and then what are the bottom two up there?
The short-term actions on the revenue side are to tax and on the expenditure side to cut. Everybody's familiar with that. In the lower left-hand corner is the option to grow.
Okay.
And a number of the governor's recommendations, for example, were addressed toward economic growth.
Okay.
Everybody favors that. The policy, interesting policy field is the lower right-hand corner. It's in your packet.
Got it. Okay,
thank
I just got the packet. So.
Thank you very much.
Very good. Thank you very much. Now to, could we have the groups that came up with the large mandate list come up or send somebody up to explain that list on behalf of the group? It's your choice. And while you're deciding what to do about that, let me just say, I think many members know this, but just for the purposes of the viewing audience as well as the audience here, we're going to take all the ideas that people came forward with as well as others that we're getting off of the legislative auditor's page and suggestions to the House caucuses. And then we're breaking down next week into subgroups where we're going to work on some of these things. And members haven't yet picked which ones they want to work on yet. But we will be having one on mandate reduction that will be just for the House K-12 Finance Committee. And we will be having one on shared services and efficiencies that will be just for the House K-12 Committee. And these will all be worked on by members of this committee. So even though there are other members out there working on all these topics, when you're working with this committee, we would like you to work with the members of this committee who are working on those topics. And one of those, and we'll think about him today, is John Benson, who represents John Benson, who's having open heart surgery, we understand, today, and will be out for a while. We hope to keep him in our prayers. And some of you have been working with him on things, and he expects to be back and feisty as usual after he recovers. He was going to work on the mandate reduction group. And so if anyone is interested in kind of working on heading that up, be sure to talk to me because he'll need some help before he gets back as well as perhaps after he does get back. And Representative Brockolo is working with his caucus to see who is heading up each of those groups from the Republican caucus. So we want these to be bipartisanly worked on and making sure that we all own the good things we're doing as well as the bad things we'll have to do. Representative Ward, did I see your hand?
Yes, Madam Chair. Two quick things. Was Representative Benson's heart surgery planned or was it an emergency?
President Ward and members, he told me about it on Friday, so it was not an emergency, but I also think if he'd planned it when he wanted it to be, it wouldn't have been right now during session. So.
I think this is my second question, Madam Chair.
All right. Let's see, Ms. Kelleher and Mr. Kite, I don't know which one's going first, but whichever one is can identify themselves and who are the spokespeople for the group, I guess.
I am Charlie Kite, Executive Director of the Minnesota Association of School Administrators, up here once again. And I'll just make a couple of quick opening comments, and then Grace Kelleher will try to give you kind of a summary of what these mandates look like. First of all, as I testified earlier,
every mandate that we have was in response to some need or some interest group. So they came to be adopted honestly. They some of them, many of the ones we identify here in statute, but we're regulated by statute, we're regulated by rule, we're regulated by legal decisions, and we're also regulated by something that we sometimes call a rule by memo that is issued by some, you know, maybe the department or some other group that gives us direction and it really takes on the course of law.
And Mr. Pite, it's my opinion on that, and we have had these discussions, you probably heard it, that if it's not gone through the legislature or the rulemaking process, you don't have to do it.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, that sounds good, but when you get crossways and you start folks in authority and you start spending thousands, tens of thousands of dollars defending yourself, maybe you don't have to do it, but you also have a very serious expense that you have to make.
Understood.
I was looking at these mandates just the other night, and I actually tried to go through them and say, how much does each one cost per pupil unit? And you know, some of them don't cost money. But I will share with you that every one of these mandates costs energy, it costs time, and in some cases, significant amounts of money. And taken together, they become quite overpowering to us. And that's why we're asking your consideration in rolling, if not all of them back, many of them back. So with that, I'm going to turn to Grace Kellier. Grace and Kurt Schneiderwin from the School Board Association, behind the scenes, spent a lot of time in the law books getting all the statutory references and trying to make these as clear as possible, while folks like myself and Scott Kroonquist and Brad Liddell just kept coming up with more ideas, and these poor folks had to figure out how to do it. They've done, I think, a pretty good job. We'll see what you want to do with them over time. So, Grace, why don't you speak to the list that we have?
Thank you, Chairman. Charlie and members of the committee, my name is Grace Kelleher, and I represent the Minnesota School Boards Association. What you see in that blue list before you represents a significant amount of time that my counterpart and I have put in, but also other school district organizations, AMSDC, Minneapolis-St. Paul helped us with it, of course the superintendents, MREA. And we all just started from the beginning and looked at what cost school districts money. These are people-intensive statutes. You heard a little bit of that in Ms. Elsweiger's testimony. 85% of school districts' budgets are spent on staff and people, so you will find these are reflective in these mandates. They cover the breadth. We have listed them not in any priority at all, but simply in statutory reference. And you'll see at least on that first page sort of a listing of school calendar issues, school day issues. For instance, things we'd like you to consider is Bemidji has missed 15 snow days this year. They're going to have to make up some time at the end of the year, and if they had a more flexible schedule, they could actually go shorter numbers of days but longer days. So our idea wasn't necessarily to skirt some of these, but give districts more flexibility in the end. We allude to a couple issues that we know you folks are working on at the Capitol, the graduation requirements and the grad test, which is a big worry for us that we're really going to need a legislative solution to. We didn't spend a lot of time dwelling on that. If you turn to page 5, probably there's two hot items on this page, and I know it doesn't look a lot different than the rest of them. The first on the top there has to do with capital expenditures and alternate facility bonding. There is a $500,000 limit on that, and it has to pass through the Department of Education for approval. And our concern with this statute in particular is that if we do get a federal stimulus package, that we need those to move. There's one person at the department who does this. It's a very slow turnaround, and if in fact there is an infusion of federal dollars, that's an area we'd like you to look at and think if districts need a better way to move that through or another place to go to move that through. It just won't work. Those folks work night and day right now, so it's not a reflection on the department, but certainly a reflection on the process. On the bottom of page 5, you'll see probably one of the most controversial pieces in here, which is transportation of charter schools and non-charter schools. But we have throughout this document a rethinking of transportation across the state of Minnesota. There are truly costs that school districts are uncompensated for, and we ask that you consider options from letting us charge a fee for transportation, repealing the mandate period and letting parents have some responsibility in getting kids to school. We're flexible, but truly that's a mandate that costs us all a significant portion of money. It may not be one you choose to repeal, but certainly we've listed it on the list because of the cost we see going forward. If you turn to page 8, you've heard lots about special education. We make a sort of a general broad statement about special education that you've heard repeatedly today, which is the federal government should maintain their promised amount, and the state should pick up the other amount promised in special education. We would like the MBE memos, which Chairman Greiling just referred to undergo legislative review and approval before implementation. This is now becoming a fine issue for districts and a real issue as far as what is the standard we need to follow when it comes to special education. And state and federal special education statutes should be aligned. This is really a reference that federal statutes need to be the prevailing statute and not state by piling on top of that. We list some statutes that will follow and rule that really sort of point this out for you. So the next pages you'll find that going forward. And if you turn to the very last page, nope, that's just more of the special ed. So, Madam Chairman, I'm going to finish that up. We'll be happy to go through these one by one. And we realize this may not be exactly what any repeal bill or reform bill, but we wanted to give you a good feeling of some of the mandates school districts face, once again, in no prioritized way, but that we have to find funds for throughout the school year.
Thank you. This is a very big service for us because we have to take a look at these. Representative Ward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Keller, thank you, and all those that participated in this. We had many education groups testifying today, and it was really enlightening for myself. Were all education groups that testified today included, did they have their input into this list? I'm just wondering that.
Ms. Keller.
Madam Chairman, I just want to be very clear that no, they have not. We really started with a small group, and I would be remiss if I did not share with you from my counterpart at MSBNA, Kirk Schneiderwin. But this is a work in progress. We are not saying we picked up everyone we should have. Certainly, a lot of the, other than the organizations I listed originally, AMFDC, St. Paul, Minneapolis, Superintendents, MREA, but really, you know, we're looking to add to this, delete this list, but we need to start someplace, and we were hoping this might be a start.
Representative Ansel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To either of you, and I really appreciate the work that you and others have done with this. Ordinarily, I like the notion of transferring decision-making from St. Paul to local communities. I think that's a good thing. The question is, do you really think, considering the magnitude of the number of mandates there, do you really think boards of education, elected boards of education, with their school superintendents and their parents and their communities, are really going to be able to pick and choose which of these to eliminate and which of these to fund and which of these are within the value system of the community in the short term? How monumental a task will this be if my local school board at Nashwaukee-Watton High School and their superintendent get this opportunity?
Ms. Kelleher, and you get the final word, and then the meeting will be adjourned.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Representative Ansel, a wonderful question. Actually, I didn't view this as transferring to your local school district. This is a list for you to work out of as an elected representative. Presently, these are all laws on the books that school districts must follow. so that the law would originate with you and go back home to be shared.
I was afraid of that.
Representative Van Zyl, that big task is for us. Meeting's adjourned.